If you have a Bible handy, let's be turning to Matthew chapter 22. Have any of you ever been put on the spot, either at work or at school, and you just froze? Or you stuck your foot in your mouth and you said something that you wish you hadn't? Well, I certainly have. And sometimes the purpose is to intentionally try to make you look bad, try to stump you, try to trap you in something that you say. And when that's the case, it's sometimes referred to as stump the chump. Well, Jesus knows what that feels like. Matthew chapter 22, we read about this time when the religious leaders in Jerusalem, they tried to play stump the chump with Jesus. They asked him some of the trickiest questions that they could come up with. And this wasn't the first time. As we read through the Gospels, we discover that they were constantly testing Jesus, looking for weaknesses, trying to trap him in something he said, maybe an inconsistency, maybe something that they could use to condemn him. But the thing is, you can't fool or trap Jesus. Well, first we see that the Pharisees and the Herodians, they tried to entangle Jesus with their best political question, verses 15 through 22. And then we see that the Sadducees, well, they tried to trip him up with their best doctrinal question in verses 23 through 33. But it didn't work. His answers just caused people to marvel and to be astonished. Well, they weren't done yet. And so we come to our text here in Matthew 22, verses 34 through 40. Let's go ahead and read it together. But when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Now, he's not a lawyer in the normal way that we think of them today. This is an expert in the law of Moses and in Jewish tradition. And his question is a great one, but apparently his motive was bad. Right words, wrong heart. It says that he was testing him. I mean, this man wasn't seeking truth. He wasn't asking out of a feeling of spiritual need. And sadly, there have always been people with bad motives and even hypocrites who will try to manipulate and to trick others. Now, I'm sure you probably have come across some of these people. We just got to make sure that we are not one of them. Now, when I was living in Australia, I came across a funny phrase that they have for someone or something that is true or genuine. And they call it being fair dinkum. And I have no idea where that saying came from. But unlike this guy, you need to make sure that you are fair dinkum. He asked, which is the great commandment? Meaning the greatest or the most important. Now, there were a number of you who went to Little Prairie Bible Camp this summer. And at camp, there are a number of different rules, like the dress code and so forth. And then some of those rules you may like more than others. But if I asked you, what is the best rule at camp? What would you say? Well, for the Jews, this was obviously a controversial question. And I read that the Jewish scholars, they'd get together and debate it. Well, the law of Moses, okay, it was comprised of a lot more than just the Ten Commandments. Some of the rabbis, they reckoned that there were actually 613 laws altogether. And so it's kind of like laying out the 613 laws on the table and telling Jesus to go over and to pick one up and say, this is it. This one is the most important. So, could it be thou shalt not kill? Or thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain? Or honor your mother and your father? I'm trying not to look over at my children. Or could it be one of the laws on keeping the Jewish holy days or the sacrificial system or circumcision? And I suspect that the Pharisees, they probably had one idea, and the Sadducees had another idea, and the Herodians still another. Not to mention the Essenes and the Samaritans and the Zealots and so forth. And this guy, he probably had a bunch of great arguments and hypothetical situations up his sleeve for any answer that Jesus would give. Or so he thought. Well, Jesus quoted from Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18, and not only is it the right answer, it is the right answer whether you're under the old covenant or the new, whether you are a Jew or a Gentile, whether your skin is red, yellow, black, or white, whether you like Xbox, PlayStation, or Nintendo, whether you like the Royals, the Cardinals, or the Cubs. And so the question is, why? Okay, why are these the greatest commandments? Why do they sum up the law and the prophets? In other words, everything that's commanded in the Old Testament. Well, it's pretty simple, really. Because if you love God, you'll obey him. And if you love your neighbor, you won't do any wrong to him. Now, in English, we have one word for love, and we use it for everything. And we've talked about this before. I love bacon, and I love my wife. I love my iPhone, and I love my God. And there's obviously a big difference. At least there should be. Well, the Greek, though, it's much more precise with its words for love. And, of course, the New Testament was originally written in Greek. The word for love here is agape, which is the purest and the highest form of love. This is the one that is a choice, whether we feel like it or not. See, many people think of love as an ooey-gooey feeling. You know, a knot in my stomach, a quiver in my liver, an ocean of emotion. But that's not biblical agape. Agape is not a feeling, but a choice. All right? And that's why we can be commanded to love in the Bible. See, this is a love that you can show to those you don't necessarily like. And you remember that Jesus, well, he even told us to love our enemies. And it's not just in words. Because anyone can say, I love you. I love you. 1 John chapter 3, verse 18. It says, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. As they say, actions speak louder than words. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the love chapter. I find it very interesting. When you look at that list, the list of the things that are there, well, those are verbs in the Greek. You know, looking at the English, you'd probably just assume that, no, those are adjectives, right? Love is patient, love is kind. But it's actually more along the lines of love shows patience. Love acts with kindness. Agape is defined by what it does. Well, this word, agape, it is found almost 200 times in the New Testament in its various forms. See, love is an essential ingredient in Christianity. Imagine pizza without cheese, apple pie without apples, church potluck without frog legs. In our passage, we are told to love God with all of our being, heart, soul, and mind. And we can see from Mark's account that he also added strength. And that's everything about me. You know, all that I am and all that I have, every fiber of my being. God will not allow division or subtraction in our love for him. He wants it all, not just a bit of our love or a bit of our devotion, a bit of our heart. And well, some people explain it like this. We don't hold anything back from God because he hasn't held anything back from us. Now, to our young people, all right, think if you gave your heart, soul, mind, and strength to a particular sport. What would that look like? Okay, what would happen? Well, you would probably buy the best equipment that you could buy. You would practice as much as you could possibly practice. You would watch that sport being played on TV. You may even subscribe to a magazine on that sport. I suspect you'll probably put up posters in your room and collect the trading cards of those who are the professionals in that particular sport. See, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, when someone has given his or her heart, soul, mind, and strength to something, whether that's a sport or a musical instrument or a hobby or anything else. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that is how we are to be when it comes to God. And so this passage here, I mean, it certainly argues against lazy, laid-back, leisurely, languid, lethargic, lackluster, lackadaisical Christians. I love my thesaurus. We're to be engaged in our Christianity and in our love for God and our love for man. Well, the second one is that you must love your neighbor as yourself. And as we can see from the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10, our neighbor is simply anyone that we come across, a fellow human being who is created in the image of God. So loving God, there's the vertical, and loving your neighbor, there's the horizontal. We need both. Some people, you know, they say, I love God, it's just other people I can't stand. But no, according to 1 John chapter 4, one of the ways we show our love to God is in our love for others. Now, it's natural to love yourself and to take care of your needs. And if I'm hungry, I get something to eat. If I'm cold, I put on a jacket. If something is bothering me, well, I deal with it. But that is the way you are to be with your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so if my neighbor is going hungry or is cold and I have the means to help, what should I do? Or if something of mine is bothering my neighbor, what am I to do? Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. The Apostle Paul said, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Now, I really like the way that he explained this commandment in Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 10. He who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. Now you think about it. Okay, if you love your neighbor, are you going to bear false witness against him? If you love your neighbor, are you going to steal from him? Are you going to commit adultery with his wife? Are you going to murder him, etc.? You see, love will motivate us to keep all of these specific laws that are designed to regulate our behavior in human relationships. So maybe now you can see why Jesus said, on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. And this word for depend, it can also be translated as hang, as it says in the NIV. And so it's kind of like a door that hangs and swings on its hinges. See, the Old Testament, it hangs on these two commands. Well, we learn from Mark's gospel that this answer made a real impact on the guy who asked the question. See, Mark chapter 12, it says that he replied, right, teacher, you have truly stated that he is one, and there is no one else beside him. And to love him with all the heart, and with all the understanding, and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as himself, is much more than all burnt offerings and sacrifices. When Jesus saw that he had answered intelligently, he said to him, you are not far from the kingdom of God. Some people thought that as long as they gave sacrifices and offerings, well, they could live any way that they wanted. Does anything like that ever happen today? Sadly, there are some people who think that as long as they partake of the Lord's Supper once a week, or they go to confession once a week, or whatever it may be, that, well, they can live any way they want. But that's not loving God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, let's talk about Jesus' response. To be in the kingdom of God, that is to be one of his people, under his rule and protection and provision. On earth, it's to be in his church, and in eternity, it's to be with him in heaven. You'll remember that Jesus told us to seek first his kingdom in Matthew 6:33. And so I'm going to end on that. Do you really want to be in the kingdom of God? Well, you need to be engaged in your Christianity. How? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, obviously, to be in the kingdom, Okay, it takes more than just approving of what Jesus has said, like this guy. You have to accept it and apply it to your life. Now, there are probably some here today who are not far from the kingdom. It could be that you've just recently started coming to worship. And maybe you're finally getting a little used to the congregational singing and the prayers, the observance of the Lord's Supper. The preacher is dressed and in his right mind, at least most of the time. You're coming to learn more of what God has said in his word. Well, you don't want to end your life with this epitaph. He or she was not far from the kingdom of God.